This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. All over Michigan, affordable housing is hard to come by, and a recent piece in Outlier Media exposed what it means to actually live in affordable housing in Detroit. The piece is called Floods, Rats, and No Hot Water. Detroit Housing Commission properties have failed inspections for years. It was written by Aaron Mondry and Rukia Colvin, and they're with me now. Hello, Aaron.
Hi, Chana.
And hello, Rukia.
Hey.
The tenants that you both spoke with are trapped in a catch-22. They can't afford to leave, but the conditions are terrible. Janice Pritchard told you, quote, "My house smells like a sewer." And these properties are owned by the Detroit Housing Commission, which was created by the federal government and overseen by a board. Rukia, how is the commission able to be so negligent with these properties?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a few things, at least from what we've gathered in researching for this story. So there's the lack of funding that they seem to receive for the low-income housing, just the lack of oversight by the property management that tends to each individual property, because while you have the Housing Commission who has a profile of properties, they're not necessarily directly overseeing the maintenance of it. That's the responsibility of the property manager. So just the lack of oversight there and lack of accountability is a big part of it.
Aaron, the last time some of these properties were inspected was 2021, and 13 of 15 properties owned by DHC failed the inspection. When they failed the inspections, what happened? And weren't they supposed to do something?
So these inspections were done internally and not part of HUD's annual review. That's the U.S. Housing and Urban Development. Those have been suspended since the start of COVID and are the ones that generally raise red flags that require immediate corrective action. Now, in 2021, the DHC said that they took action to repair issues with health and safety around every individual unit. But the houses that we visited showed an array of problems from persistent flooding to pests like roaches and mice. You know, there was no running water, no hot water. And these issues were pretty commonplace. But, you know, if you go through the inspection reports and you look item by item, you see dozens of instances of each of these problems. So as far as we could tell, there was no widespread remedy applied after 2021.
Rukia, what can people in other parts of the state take away from what's happening in Detroit?
I would say that there's a real need and a sense of urgency for how, A, we view affordable housing, because I do want to provide the distinction that it is a difference between affordable housing and low-income housing. And also just really thinking a bit deeper of how we view folks who are left to find low-income housing, the accessibility of that, and just the need to pressure our policymakers more and also these housing authorities to do better. Like, it's not enough to just say that there's not enough funding when this has been a decades-long issue. So what does it look like to pressure folks to change that, especially as we see a lot of funding coming in nowadays for infrastructure changes and all of these other things? We have to think deeper of why we're still not prioritizing housing, especially for more vulnerable folks, when that's essentially, you know, something that affects our quality of life and should be available to everyone, as that's an essential need for, as a human being.
You know, we talked to one family very briefly at the digs. They said, just because we're poor doesn't mean we deserve to live in substandard housing. I think that just rings so true. There's a terrible stigma against public housing in this country. And at least in these cases, it is not at all the fault of the people living in them. It's because the people who are supposed to be taking care of these properties aren't doing a good enough job.
When asked for comment, the 5-member mayor-appointed board of commissioners basically said, look, we're underfunded, rent isn't being collected, there's been staff turnover because of the pandemic, and they didn't really commit to any actions. A spokesperson
person said, according to your piece, quote, public housing nationally is so dramatically underfunded that it is extremely difficult to achieve the standard our residents deserve, end quote. Rukia, how did you react to that?
That just lets me know where the priorities are, both nationally and locally. I know this is a national issue as far as like funding for low income housing folks. It's also kind of tone deaf when, especially in Detroit, you see a lot of development still popping up, especially in the downtown and surrounding area. And there is always the quote unquote affordable housing available, or affordable units, because a lot of times it's multifamily housing, when it's really no more than 5 units available and definitely still not attainable for low income residents. So I don't know. It was a really tone deaf response, I feel like. And it really sucks for them to throw out the fact that there is no funding when this has been a decades long issue. I want to say shortly after, essentially since low income housing has been available, it seems like it's been an issue ever since. So, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem like there's a real sense of urgency to really address the issue. And just overall, it's disheartening the way that rather locally or nationally, decision makers treat both low-income housing tenants and also unhoused people.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, there'll be more on the Detroit Housing Commission.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm here with Aaron Mundry and Rukia Colvin. The piece you two wrote said that despite DHC's challenges at maintaining the properties that they have, that Mayor Mike Duggan has named DHC a partner in his $203 million affordable housing plan and is committing at least 3 multifamily properties and wants to sell 9 more. Does the housing plan fund accommodate for the needs DHC needs to make their repairs? And has there been pushback to the city wanting DHC to take on more? Aaron, let's start with you.
No, there's no additional funding, as far as I know, in the plan to support the DHC's initiative. The money is coming from a previous sale of the Brewster Douglas site by the DHC, which was bought by Dan Gilbert. So they will be entirely funding these rehabs, and then they'll potentially be in charge of future management. They will certainly be the sole owner. They might contract that out to a third party, but they're essentially going to be folding these new properties into their current portfolio. And as you know, based on what we found, they've struggled to keep their standards acceptable.
Aaron, since the DHC was created in 1933, have they always struggled with finding funds to maintain their properties? And if not, when did they start to really struggle with that funding?
You know, I'm not an expert in the history of the DHC or public housing authorities, but from what I've heard, you know, this has been a long time struggle for not just the Housing Commission, but public housing authorities across the country for several decades. The federal government committed many millions of dollars to refurbishing, in some cases demolishing, and building entirely new public housing developments in the 90s with a program called Hope 6. Detroit actually kind of bungled that a little bit and went into receivership for the way that they handled that grant, among other issues, in 2005. And they were in receivership, basically managed or overseen very strictly by HUD for about a decade, came out of that in 2015. And The portfolio has been in a steady state of decline for decades because it's true, there is not enough money to maintain these properties. They don't generate enough income. They don't get enough grants from the federal government. And these are very old buildings in most cases. But I should add, there are alternative options available that would allow them to unlock funding that the Housing Commission has not taken full advantage of.
Can you tell us more about those possible options that they're not taking advantage of?
So HUD started a program about a decade ago called the Rental Assistance Demonstration, which basically converts public housing into, at the moment, if you want to maintain public housing, you're going to rely almost 100% on funding from the federal government. But with Rental Assistance Demonstration, or RAD, you can take out loans, you can partner with private investors, and that allows you to unlock entirely new sources of funding. And some public housing authorities have converted their entire portfolio to RAD. The Housing Commission has yet to convert a single property to RAD. So they are well behind the eight ball here. And that's a big problem. And as you can see, it's costing them time and money. And in the meantime, residents just have to wait in these really subpar homes that they're living in.
Rukia, you wrote an article last year about the Detroit Housing Commission's silence on plans to rehabilitate villages at Parkside Housing Complex. Since your article, has the DHC decided on whether they will spend any of its $6 million of their capital on the Parkside's repair?
No, I don't think they have decided that. I think it's a little bit tricky with the villages at Parkside because they're one of the last, if not the last development under the Housing Commission's portfolio where they are under the Hope 6 deal, which is something that they're moving away from. It's a step down from what RAD is. So the Hope 6 deal, it allowed private developers and private owners to essentially have full ownership of a housing development. And the Housing Commission's role is just to oversee their management in that, but it's completely invested and owned by, or was, the Housing Commission owns it now. But for quite some time, it was privately owned. So with that, because the housing development is in so much disrepair, I think they're still deciding it, actually. I know there was an RFQ put out for a developer. I think that deal may have fell through because of funding. So I think they're still in the weeds of figuring out like how they're going to allocate funding to developing that particular site.
You know, Rukia's reporting showed that that place has been in severe decline for a decade. The Detroit Housing Commission took over control in January 2022. Residents were hoping it would take a few months for them to start turning around the property, making improvements. We're now in May 2023. The development deal has fallen through. That happened just a couple of weeks ago. They are now going to have to put out another RFP. Residents are going to have to wait who knows how much longer. And the entire time they have maintained the same property manager, who is also the owner that let the property completely fall apart. And they've had to deal with this same company, Formidable is their name, this entire time. And in our interviews with the CEO of the DHC, Sandra Enriquez, she would not commit to switching out the property management company. So these residents are going to have to deal with this same company for an indeterminate length of time.
I want to dig a little bit into some of the reporting that went into this piece. Can you two talk to me about what you saw and where you went and some of the people that you spoke with?
I could say this was a tag team effort, and I didn't go to all of the sites, but I visited some of the Diggs homes with Aaron and Yeah, the conditions, it's almost similar to the villages at Parkside. A lot of the units were boarded up, a lot of disrepair. A couple folks actually let us into their home, and you know, there was one unit where there was a really bad smell in the basement. They were telling us how, you know, they had water issues, flooding in their basement, like water would come into the basement because of an issue that they had been coming to the housing commission about for months at this point, and it still wasn't addressed. I believe this tenant had, I want to say, at least three kids. It was three or five kids, but the fact that, you know, the dad was home at the time, but I believe this was Janice's home, and the fact that she had to live in this unit with her kids, and you have this smell that at this point they were used to, but it was still a really bad smell coming out of this unit, was disheartening and alarming. Just the amount of trash that's in the area really sucked to see. And the fact that you had a lot of spaces there where there will be one unit surrounded by like boarded up units, and it makes me think of the safety for tenants, but just the overall lack of care in the space bothered me.
Yeah, we knocked on or visited at least 100 units, I would say. We went to four different developments. Villages at Parkside, I'm talking about collectively between the two of us. Villages at Parkside, Brewster Homes, Diggs, and a bunch of single family homes, which are part of this scattered site development, as it's called. And we, as Rukia said, went inside a number of these homes. But the most surprising thing to us was how many were vacant, either boarded up or abandoned and had broken windows or had fire damage. The Detroit Housing Commission has a 78% occupancy rate, which is extremely low. National average for housing authorities is 95% occupancy, and HUD technically requires a 96% occupancy. And Ms. Enriquez basically said she didn't have an excuse, that it was unacceptable. And there is currently a wait list of 80,000 people at for DHC properties. And with, we're talking hundreds of homes just sitting empty, you know, that's a real missed opportunity.
What is DHC attribute the 80,000 people wait list to? If there's, you know, housing available, like, why aren't people getting into these houses? And I mean, 80,000 people just seems like a point of no return. Like, how do you even make a dent in that?
Yeah, it's a crazy big number. I mean, I imagine a lot of those people applied years ago and have since found alternative options. I mean, I would hope that's a best case scenario, honestly. Staretha James, who we spoke to, she had been waiting 9 years for a house. She'd been on the wait list that long. And, you know, I mean, the answer is that there is just an incredible need in this city for deeply affordable housing. People who live in housing commission units pay no more than 30% of their rent and utilities. People who live in homes owned by the housing commission pay no more than 30% of their income on rent and utilities. That's a minimum of $50, but most people pay less than $200 a month. You know, the Detroit Housing Commission is one of the only organizations in the city offering that kind of home, and certainly at this volume. And yeah, it just speaks to the incredible need that exists in this city for that type of housing.
Erin Mondry and Rukia Colvin, thank you so much for joining me here today on Mishmash.
Thank you, Shayna.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim and Sophia Joswiak, with additional production support from Jack Philbrandt. As always, if you listen to this show and you want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review, or if you really, really like the podcast, and we really, really, really hope you do, you can support WDET. Just go to wdet.org/give. Without your support, none of this would be possible. Talk to you next week.